You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where do you know how I know you're gay? You tell everyone you are. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful bromantic, and I retroactively and proactively denounce anything anyone has ever said and ever will say on this show. There's a whole lot of farce this week. I think this is more of sort of the death throes of peak farce, where when you are coming down off of peak farce, you hit some of the farciest. That sounds like I'm talking about how to speak the language Farsi. I'm not. Also, I meant peak woke, not peak farce. But
oh, yeah.
You get
we'll
what
never
I'm
reach
saying.
Peak farce. Yeah, that's true.
No, we'll never reach peak farce. There's no such thing as peak farce, right? That was the thing we learned from former co-host Elliot, Midterner Elliot. There is no such thing as peak farce. But peak woke. I think we're in the death throes of peak woke. I think potentially that's what 2024 will be known as. And we got more of that this week. So we'll get into it. But first, I have to bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from his corner office, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. It's an exciting week this week. I've been super busy, still at work, but I'm cooking out today on my new deck. So very excited. Some friends are coming over. Going to cook some flank steaks and cleaned out and got everything ready for today. I'm very excited. I'm looking forward to it. So let's start today with some cheap laughs at woke expense. Wow, do we have some farce today? I a little insider baseball. We had a nice outline, and then I found a story, and I think this is like the second show in a row or third show in a row where I've found something right before the printing presses of the midside started printing. And had to throw off the whole outline. So we've got some farce for you today.
This one was at least when I was in the middle of writing the outline. So it wasn't as
like
bad.
After.
And it made for a much better episode title. This is one of the best episode titles we've had. It's actually, as you've pointed out with this story, and we'll get to it, but it's the idea of woke or joke. You would think it was joke. I mean, if you heard the name, the Queer Planet Edition, you would think that's some sort of satirical South Park episode or satirical comic book or something of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not. Or is it? We'll find out.
In Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the hate. As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. You can also now do it through Fountain. That is where you can give us sats. That's short for Satoshis. Don't ask me anything about that because I know nothing about that. But you can give us support on Patreon, Locals, and Fountain. Show us support. No, give, not show. Actions speak louder than words. All right, I want to start with a couple follow-ups, William. The first is just a little bit of, we told you so. Or I guess we could more appropriate say, you told us so. So the portal between New York City and Dublin has already been shut down temporarily due to inappropriate behavior. Mm-hmm. In a statement shared with NBC New York, the Flatiron Nomad says, instances of inappropriate behavior have come from a very small minority of portal visitors and have been amplified on social media. In New York, we've had a set of protocols in place since the portal's launch, including 24/7 on-site security and barriers to prevent people from stepping onto the portal. Founder and artist Benedictus Gillis understands the portal as a 24/7 project and a work in progress, so the piece can be periodically closed to run technical updates to ensure the experience is lovely for everyone. Do you want to get in your I told you so's, William?
Mm-hmm. I told you so.
100%.
William, my degree from FU says you are 100% correct.
I was correct. But, Justin, isn't it funny? Like, there's one thing that I'm waiting to happen that will happen. They're going to turn this back on. Here's my next Nostradamus. I got the Adam Carolla crystal brain. The next thing that will happen is someone will be charged with hate speech. And you would guess it would be the Dublin side, but I'm going to guess it's going to be the New York side. So someone is going to use the portal for hate speech, quote unquote, and they're going to be charged with it. That's your next prediction.
Yeah, I disagree with you that you would guess it would be the Dublin side. I think it's completely predictable it would be the New York side. So then everyone could go, huh, ignorant racist Americans.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but Dublin actually has a hate speech law. Like they've made it illegal to tweet and a bunch of other things, right? It's not a no-brainer. I think you've got a chance of being. I have a chance of being wrong. It could be the Dublin side that gets the hate speech charge first. I think on the Dublin side, it'll be more like a religious issue of some kind. But that's just from my limited experience in Ireland. So yeah, that's my next prediction.
Yeah, it's a good prediction. All of this, though, just raises questions for me, and I don't want to dwell on this because we got much more interesting farce, but it's the idea of this being on public land, but it's not a public installation. And what I mean by that is if they were really concerned about this being shut down due to inappropriate behavior, wouldn't they have some sort of a shield in place? And what I mean by that is I can't think of the right word.
Like an iris from Stargate to close if something inappropriate happens.
Well,
or an iris that, time delay.
Well, yeah, all of these things. Like a layer that you have to get through in order to use it.
I think
like they talk about 24/7.
Yeah, and on the New York side at least, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, what are you going to show on the portal rather than just walking by it? You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think this is one other thing, Justin, that that I don't think anyone today will ever understand quite the way our like age cohort does, is online is not real life. If you walked around New York and mooned people or all the other inappropriate behaviors in front of that happened in front of the portal. If you did those things in real life, you would eventually get arrested, right?
Right.
But you do it, but this is everyone, every human knows instinctively, oh, this is online. So this is more playful. This is more, I can get away with it, right? I'm not saying that it's true necessarily, but the idea is in everyone's head that there's no consequence, right?
Right.
Or well, that is worth the consequence, right?
Yeah, it's the anonymity thing we always talk about here.
Yes. Which I'm all for, right? Like, I like that there's this transgressive area and that online can be that thing.
Meh. I don't want to get into it right now.
Yeah,
I disagree. I don't like it.
But you see what I mean, right? This is a
100%
that experiment, right? That this is...
It's what it is... Is people being, we can debate whether it's good or not. There's this area where people think things are less serious and you don't have to be act with as much integrity. However, what this is people being unable to code switch between the two.
Yeah.
Because this isn't really anonymous, like they can see you. But people associate online with that behavior you're talking about and they can't code switch. That's probably the more interesting thing this quote unquote experiment or art installation has revealed.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, another follow-up. One of our favorite follow-ups is there's been more COVID. I guess we could call this the I told you so follow-up segment because this is the same thing. And this is something that, as you mentioned earlier, you said Adam Carolla has been talking about this too. So this is from the National Review. the nation's top public health official, during the COVID-19 pandemic admitted that the origins of the coronavirus remain up for debate, the lab leak theory is not a conspiracy, and there was no scientific evidence to support the government's social distancing guidance. Former National
Institute the science.
Well, that what I learned from this story is this guy was actually over Fauci. So in this case, Fauci was like Darth Vader and this guy was like the Emperor. That's what I learned from this story. But this guy, Dr. Francis Collins, who was the former National Institutes of Health director, testified behind closed doors earlier this year and made those admissions to the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, according to a transcript and accompanying subcommittee memo provided to National Review. Here's some quotes. Do you recall science or evidence? By the way, do you recall science?
Science, like, or evidence? The science. Yeah. The science. Did the faith? Is this not faith versus reason, right? Do you have any faith-based or evidence-based arguments for X?
Like, science is an abstract concept meant to label the concrete experimentation that you do in order to gather evidence. You don't recall science. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Oh, do I you recall math? The science of Epicurean circles or orbits
that support the 6-foot distance? A staffer asked Collins about the Centers for Disease Control social distancing guidance during the pandemic. I do not, Collins said. Is it that I do not recall, or I do not see any evidence supporting 6 feet, the staffer replied. I did not see evidence, but I'm not sure I would have shown evidence at that point, Collins said, according to the transcript, adding that he has not seen evidence since then to support the CDC's 6 feet guidance.
Aren't those weaselly words?
Yes.
This is like corpo speak, right? It's like, he's not saying that there was no evidence. He's just saying he didn't see any. And he still hasn't seen any. And his eyes will remain closed for the rest of his life. And he will never see any.
But what's worse than that, right? I mean, we can argue about that all day, where it's a technicality he's trying to minimize his guilt for. But what's more damning here is, I'm not sure I would have shown evidence at that point. So he's saying, even if there was evidence, such as how there was evidence that masks were ineffective, he wouldn't have shown it. Because his priority was to do anything and anything, everything to, generously, I'm going to say this, protect people. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't worried about giving people freedom of choice. He was worried about protecting them from themselves. So he's saying he would have lied to them, probably. Is that not what he's saying?
Yes. Yes. He's saying,
we've got to follow the science.
The science, right? It's the science. And
it's the force.
Yeah.
You're talking about faith. It's the force dude.
It's the force.
These are Sith Lords. Look, you know I don't like Star Wars. Yeah. Are these not Sith Lords getting us to follow their version of using the force?
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. We've got to follow the science. This whole idea that I want to expand on this whole argument that it's fate. You're supposed to just take the knowledge from the experts. But that is not what science is. Science is you understanding it through experimentation, right? This is a connection to your mind and understanding and building on other ideas and concepts that other people have done the same thing with. There's no substitution. Science doesn't mean turn off your brain, right? You have to know you have to understand not just the formula that you're using, but the context in which it is useful. And science is a tool that requires thinking, not faith and just blind acceptance. And the whole idea that we labeled everyone who thought social distancing was bullshit and that the lab leak is a possibility as a conspiracy theorist gets back to what we were talking about last show, right? That everything is a conspiracy theory until it's not, right? That everything that you are morally condemned if you don't have certain views until all of a sudden those views are found to be true or convenient for the political class. It's very, very, very puritanical world.
Yeah, it's
the Scarlet Letter. It's the Scarlet Letter.
It is a Scarlet Letter. but it's difficult because there is value in gatekeeping and in the Scarlet Letter, but it has to be balanced with using your own judgment, as you're saying. And here's where it gets difficult. What is scary about this situation is Francis Collins and Fauci are supposed to be scientists in themselves. And they're saying here that the 6-foot guidelines just appeared. And they said we have to follow the science. So they're acting in a faith-based manner. And they're supposed to be the experts. Now, for the rest of us, for the normal person who are not scientists by profession or expertise, to a certain extent, we don't have the time or the knowledge to do all the experiments. And to a certain extent, you go to the doctor because you trust the doctor's expertise, right? When the doctor is talking to you, they're giving you recommendations, and then you have to decide whether to follow those recommendations or not, because you still have to use your brain, but you have to trust that they are presenting you with the best options, because we are limited creatures who only have so much time and so much ability in order to figure things out. Now, in this case, they took advantage of that and they said, oh, well, we're going to operate on faith and we're going to not give you recommendations, but tell you exactly what to do. And the whole system broke down, because really what's missing here is respect from the top down. And now, because of, as you said, with, you know, conspiracy theories are scarlet letters until they're not. Now, because of the internet, there's no respect from the bottom up.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, look at flat earthers, okay? I'm picking an extreme example because I think your point is well made, but the counter argument is flat earthers. They will convince themselves that the earth is flat when clearly it is not. I actually think this is equivalent to masks and social distancing, but let's not go into that rhetoric right
100%.
Now. 100%. But the point is, these people will never trust an expert ever about anything. And in that case, shame and the Scarlet Letter are worthwhile, because you want to label those people as the anti-reason people they are. But now they have a valid point about not trusting the experts, because the experts are not reason based.
I have the solution for you, or a solution for you, Justin, and it's false dichotomy, bro. The way to get out of this is to not trust experts, but to judge them rigorously.
Right.
And
well,
I think
right. And that's,
Alex Epstein has in his latest book, right, In Fossil Future, has a whole chapter, I think, devoted to judging experts, right? It's not that you need to be the expert in every field. It's that you need to judge experts. And part of how you judge experts is the argument they're making to you faith-based? Or is it reason-based? Even if you can't pull all the concretes, if they're presenting it to you in a reason-based way, that's evidence that you're dealing with an expert who's connected to reality. And yet, it's not, then you're not accepting their judgment on faith. You're accepting their judgment on your judgment of their judgment, right?
Right.
You could still be wrong. You could still be wrong, but at least you're using reason and not faith.
Right. And what has enabled, William, this focus on the extremes and the faith-based anti-reason behavior of the extremes is the fact that the people in the middle, in the mid-side, in the average, are not using their judgment to look at anyone. They're existing based on inertia. They're existing based on emotions. So it's what happened to the pandemic. Rather than people get upset like we did, people got mad at us and stopped listening to us.
We lost our Canadian listener. I think we've recovered other Canadian listeners since that, but
yeah, I mean, I say that facetiously, but it's to make a point. Everyone just went along with it. It's what I've said from the beginning. If everybody uses their mind and doesn't trust the judgment of the government, government has two choices. One, let it happen, or two, bring tanks into cities.
Yeah.
They were not going to bring tanks into cities over this. We just let them do it.
Yeah.
Because we exist on emotion and inertia. And the emotion of the time was, well, I want to be liked and I don't want to cause a problem. And the inertia was, well, it's just easier to go along, to get along and just stay inside.
100%.
And that's why the pandemic happened.
Yep. So last, we cannot leave the COVID story without me demanding, as I always do, COVID reparations. Every single government official, every single person of the media owes me personally reparations for all the damage done to me during COVID, including all
I think Peacock is going to give you
social,
reparations.
Economic, everything else. So,
yeah, they're not going to give you financial reparations, but I think Peacock is trying to give you reparations in a different way.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But first, we have to talk about some of another segment we love here on the Midside, the most magical farce on earth. What we've got here is a couple grannies gone wild, and they each present, I think, a different little bit of perspective on sort of the world and the way it is right now. So the first one is a story of somebody dressed as Goofy complaining about the way an old woman treated him. And I'm going to read this story. The 32-year-old male cast member who worked as a costume character was taking a picture around 10:30 a.m. with a family of four. Three of the family members posed on his right, while the grandma stood on his left side and put her arm around him, the victim said. Interesting use of the word victim here, William, by the way.
Wait, who's the victim? The granny or the costume worker?
Goofy. The guy dressed as Goofy.
All right.
The grandmother then placed her right hand on his butt, put butt in quotation marks for some reason, I guess because it's not the scientific word, and squeezed her hand three times, the report said. During the squeezing, the grandmother said, "Woohoo!" Maybe she was just singing the DuckTales theme song. Did he think of that? After the photo was taken, the victim stopped the meet and greet to alert his attendant he had been groped. A park leader was also notified behind the scenes. The grandmother stated with an attitude, "What? I guess he doesn't want us here," according to the report. The family then walked off. The grandma, whose name was not identified in the report, was described as being in her 60s and wearing leggings with a black Minnie Mouse shirt that read, "Nana Mouse." Now, William, to me, this is a story where both sides are wrong. Now, before I go into why the cast member is wrong, I want to point out that obviously this is inappropriate by the grandmother, right? There's no reason to grab Goofy's ass, right? Okay, we can agree on
now,
that.
Maybe pinch his cheek, pinch his little cheek. That would be more in character, right?
Right, but I don't want to take what I'm about to say as a defense of the grandmother and saying what she did was right. What she did was wrong, and she shouldn't have done it. But is this reaction by the cast member proportionate to the wrongdoing? And what I mean by it is, while inappropriate, there was no way he was damaged in any sort of long-term way to then no longer perform his job and deny the opportunity to meet Goofy to all of the other attendees in line.
Was he straight to the hospital?
I mean, it says, it doesn't give details here, but it says he stopped the meet and greet.
Oh, jeez.
And it says he stopped the meet and greet to alert his attendant he had been groped. A park leader was also notified behind the scenes. Isn't this something, William, that, especially because you're in a costume, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Isn't this something that you would then later tell people and be like, isn't this funny? This old, creepy old lady did this to me.
Yeah, but I guess, I don't know, man. I've got to do my oppression Olympics. I'm assuming if this was a gay minority, then that's why this is traumatic. And do we know the race of the park guest? We've got to do our oppression Olympics, right? And see.
Well, Nana could be Hispanic or could be.
Hard.
White, but Hispanics are white. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's hard. My oppression Olympics Caucasian calculator can't calculate this. So if we use the oppression Olympics calculator, I think we can get trauma here. But yes, in reality, no. I don't think this is traumatic. Inappropriate? Sure. But out of proportion? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason I wanted to bring this up. It's just because, like, this shows the sort of victim culture we live in right now, right? Where everything is terrible with this. I mean, everything I was working at Walmart, like, a creepy old dude hit on me in the corner of the electronics department. And I didn't, like, report him or anything, get him thrown out of the store. I was just like, that dude's creepy. And that was the end of it. You know what I mean? But let's take the heteronormative approach here.
You didn't tell him that? Send him on his way?
that would have been funnier. Okay. So the next one is even more insane, William. And I think this next story points to all of the narcissism in our culture. I think this is another instance where both sides are wrong and both sides are acting narcissistically. And I'll be interested to see what you think. So this is an article this is actually a Reddit post that made it all the way to Fox News. And the headline here is Reddit drama about Disney trip by grandma and kids goes viral as she refuses to apologize to family. So Reddit user Simple Band, which sounds like Simple Plan Band, 96 revealed the situation on the AITA, which is Am I the Asshole subreddit, in a post on Thursday, March 7, asking, Am I the asshole for taking my grandchildren to Disney for the first time without their mother and refusing to apologize when confronted? By the way, William, I find it interesting there's an entire forum online for people to figure out if they're an asshole or not. Like, why do other people need to tell you if you're the asshole or not?
Yeah, I think it's the narcissism machine.
Right.
Is what it is.
So she said, I recently babysat my grandchildren, 5 and 4, for a period of 4 nights and 5 days so my son and his wife could attend a wedding in Mexico and spend a few days on vacation. It seemed like a long time to watch the kids, and she has point blank told me that the woman's family is more important than the man's, so I was irritated I was being asked to babysit the kids, yet the daughter-in-law's mother was not asked to do, the woman wrote. Flash ahead to the babysitting time period, while the kids were with her, Simple Band 9096 said she... Doesn't that play like Anthem? Equality? Said she was invited to a birthday party at Epcot, one of the 4 main theme parks at Walt Disney World Resort, and wanted to go. My daughter-in-law was furious and burst into tears, she said. She said, I stole one of her kids first and called me entitled. I know she is a huge Disney person, but it was Epcot, not quintessential Disney. By the way, Epcot isn't quintessential Disney?
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't realize us people in Florida thought that way. This is somebody who lives 2 hours from the park, by the way. And I don't feel I should have had to miss out on a birthday party I wanted to attend, the woman wrote. I told my son I am not apologizing for anything, and maybe they should think about how they made me feel when they didn't respect my initial no. She added, my son feels like Reddit is going to show me the error of my ways. Like, what? Who is like, yeah, you know what? Go to Reddit for the truth. Speaking to Fox News Digital, the grandmother said she felt pretty good about the resulting response to her post. I know my son read all the comments and is feeling pretty embarrassed right now, she said. A family therapist told Fox News Digital that while the daughter-in-law's emotions were understandable, she needed to adjust her views of the situation. It's understandable for the daughter-in-law to feel disappointed that she wasn't the one to introduce Disney to her kids. Rachel Goldberg, LMFT, founder of Rachel Goldberg Therapy in Los Angeles, told Fox News Digital via email, taking care of 2 young children for an extended period can be challenging, and if you're entrusting grandma with that responsibility, it's essential to relinquish some control over how things are done, even if it doesn't meet your expectations, said Goldberg.
100%.
It could be beneficial for the daughter-in-law to reframe her mindset to focus on the joy the children experience rather than solely on not being the one credited for the outing, she said.
That's definitely,
what are your thoughts?
That's definitely one big part of my take. It's like, is this my not chick wiring? I don't understand that amount of emotion about not being a first for something, not being there for a first of something. It's like, did the kids have fun? Like, I'm glad someone had fun. Like, I can take them to Disney whenever I want. They're my kids, right? I'm trying to put myself in the shoes, right? And I'm not understanding what the big upset is that much.
Yeah,
maybe I would be disappointed in a way, but like, what, that part is hard for me to understand. I'm just going to admit that up front.
Yeah, no,
am I an emotionless clown? I don't know.
No, I do think this is a male-female thing with what you're saying as far as... sorry, I lost my train of thought. As far
being
as like...
first, yeah. Like
right, well, right. Being first and thinking about the kid's experience. And that's where I'm talking about the narcissism coming in is her first thought here is the kids in this story are a prop for both of them.
Yeah.
And that's her first thought here is not... Oh, what did the kids think? Did the kids enjoy it? Would they want to go back? Did they have a good time with you? It's just that, no, you took this away from me. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't even know how much of it is chick think, because if chick think is more emotional and focused on the kids, wouldn't it be like, how are the kids and what did they think and did they have a good time?
Yeah, you're right. It's more narcissism. It's got to be more narcissism, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing with the grandma too, right? Like, when you take on the responsibility of babysitting, sometimes you have to miss events you would otherwise want to go to. And I'm not sure, right, and this is as someone who goes to Epcot often, I'm not sure taking a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old who have never been to Epcot to an older person's birthday party at Epcot is the smartest choice. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
for the
agreed.
Children.
Yeah. Well, and so what is this? What is this part about not respecting the initial no? So the grandma said no to watching the kids for this extended time, and they just insisted anyway. Is that what I'm reading there?
Right. And this is something else I don't understand. And I guess this is where I'm more American and individualistic versus collectivistic. We're in a lot of collectivistic cultures, the whole family raises, right? The extended family beyond raises the child. But for me, it's like so many people just use their parents as free babysitting. Mm-hmm. Where I know a couple who moved from Florida back to California because they had a kid and they wanted to be around their parents to help raise the kid. So imagine changing your entire lifestyle, and to me, damaging your entire lifestyle in order to get it easier for yourself.
Yeah.
To take advantage of people. Do you see what I'm saying? I think that's 100% what's going on here. Now, we could debate whether the grandmother should have helped them out. But not only, look, again, I'm talking about the grandmother not wanting to give up her Epcot birthday party. How about these parents going to the wedding and taking a few extra days of vacation? Now, again, I don't know the full context. Maybe they haven't been on a vacation in forever, and these things are important. But none of these people could sit down and have an adult conversation about this because they're all narcissists.
Yeah. Yep. Narcissism on parade. I don't know. Yeah, everyone's wrong in this situation, too. I just can't get over this this idea, like you said, of you took this away from me. Like, that's the part I can't, like, that narcissism there of the mother is, I think, what most of the Redditors responded to.
Yeah. Okay, next thing I wanted to talk about here is more California insanity. A California city, a.k.a. what city, William? San Francisco, uses taxpayer money to provide vodka for homeless alcoholics. In San Francisco, a new approach to homelessness and alcohol addiction involves the city providing beer and vodka shots to homeless alcoholics under a taxpayer-funded initiative. This program, known as the Managed Alcohol Program, is designed to prevent severe alcohol withdrawal among the homeless by providing them with controlled doses of alcohol. San Francisco health officials state, a program that provides alcohol to homeless alcoholics prevents the city's most vulnerable from using emergency services. So, William, here's the point I'm at with all of this. didn't they shut down all sorts of institutions to put people in who yes. are on the streets due to either addiction or mental health?
Yes, yes.
But now, aren't we basically doing things that are substituting for that? I mean, here, they're calling it a managed alcohol program. Well, if you had an institution for alcoholics to be put in who are on the streets, couldn't you help them through withdrawals and have a managed alcohol program that no one would need to know about because you would just say it's part of the treatment? Now, I'm not saying they would hide it, right? Because obviously it's the government, it should be public. But the point is, you'd be giving it to them not on the streets, and it would be an actual program which is actually taking care of them. Whereas now it's just like, well, we don't want them using emergency services, so we're going to give them alcohol so they don't use emergency services.
Yeah, the goal here is to reduce the spend of the government, right? This is to reduce the impact of the homeless people on the government, right? Them using right. emergency services is not desirable, so we'll just give them alcohol instead of dealing with the problem, right? Giving an alcoholic right. alcohol is not a solution to the problem. It's literally not a solution to the actual problem.
It's literally the opposite. Yeah. It is the problem. It is enabling.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, we've been saying for years that they, like, you know, and Adam and Dr. Drew have been saying for years, Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew have been saying for years, they're enabling the homeless people. Now they are literally enabling the homeless people. You can't argue it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. This is exactly enabling behavior. This is giving someone alcohol in an uncontrolled environment like this is not treatment. That is not treatment.
How do they get to this point? Is it literally being purely pragmatic with what they're trying to do? This seems like so short-sighted.
I don't know. I mean, it's there's got to be some strange feel-good reason, right? That's the only thing that you can come up with, right? It's like, oh, well, they're dying of alcohol withdrawal, so we'll give them some alcohol. That'll solve it.
I think the feel-good reason is keeping them homeless. But I think this is now a pragmatic response to a problem keeping them homeless presents. Do you get what yeah. I'm saying?
Yep.
It's just insane. It's just insane. Why anyone would live in San Francisco? I mean, I have a thing where I will not buy alcohol for people. Being straight edge, I will not, just like I won't buy drugs for people, I won't buy alcohol for people. So literally the government would be forcing me to break my own morals if I lived in San Francisco, because they would be using my tax money to pay for the managed alcohol program. Would they yeah. not be?
Yeah, they would be.
I would love to see if there was a straight edge person in San Francisco. And they would probably tell me exactly what you said. I'm not empathetic. And this is an empathetic way of helping them. Just because I'm strong enough to not drink doesn't mean they're not, because they have a disease. And then they would make me feel bad. And that's how even something like Straight Edge, which started individualistically, has become collectivistic.
Yep.
It's crazy. All right, but talking about crazy and collectivistic, NBC Universal is releasing a docuseries on Peacock called Queer Planet. Want to hit the drop?
Let's listen to the entire thing. Here we go.
The paparazzi really are everywhere.
Everything you were told as a kid is wrong.
You make me wanna dance.
Gay penguins, bisexual lions, sex-changing clownfish.
This is a queer planet.
Queerness has always existed. It's only in humans that we have such a stigma about it.
The idea of just having two fixed sexes is clearly out of style.
Mother Nature is pretty open-minded. You make me
Sex is not just for reproduction.
It's clear that no matter where you look on our planet, nature is full of queer surprises.
To be honest, we should all probably get laid a little more than we do.
What do you think,
so William,
Justin?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Should I respond just to the trailer, or should I read a description here of what the show's about?
Oh, well, I don't know.
But let's take the heteronormative approach here.
Let's read the description of the show.
Okay. Queer Planet traverses the world to uncover nature's hidden LGBTQ plus community, witnessing extraordinary creatures and never before seen behaviors that shed new light on unconventional sexualities and genders in the natural world. Plus, comma, scientists weigh in with the facts on what comes naturally in the animal world as it relates to sex and gender. The first of its kind nature documentary is narrated by actor Andrew Reynolds from Gutenberg the Musical and Girls Five Ever, and premieres exclusively on Peacock June 6th, just in time for Pride Month. And then they talk about a whole bunch of scientists here that are in the show. So
we've got to follow the science.
Where do we start with this? If I told you that, I told you when I found this, and I told you also this morning that this is woke or joke. You had pointed this out, but if I had told you that description of a show coming out in like 2019 as a woke or joke, I would have stymied the entire crew here at the Midside with woke or joke. All of you would have probably said joke. Right? Like we are living in we can never reach peak farce, but this is the proof that we cannot live in peak farce. This is a contender, is it not, for the peak farce award already. We're not even halfway through the year.
It's definitely a contender for the peak farce award, and I think there are several elements of it that really show what's wrong here on multiple levels. And actually, the way I find myself responding to it intellectually is very interesting. So the things I would point out are the following. The first is the quote, everything you've been taught is wrong. I think you have that drop.
Everything,
right?
You were taught as a kid is wrong.
This is what I have been saying for how long, William? The idea that the people who believe in social justice, believe in collectivism, want to destroy what came before and rebuild it to show what is flawed about it, because they want to show what is flawed about their childhood and the way they grew up, right? Yeah. This is one of the things I said it most starkly with the Saved by the Bell reboot, right? Where they turned the whole thing into privilege, right? They said, oh, the original Saved by the Bell was all about privilege, right? There's the whole Zach Morris's trash. What was that, a podcast and everything? Yeah. And it was the idea of trying to convince us that everything we were told about what it meant to grow up in America as a teenager in high school was wrong. Well, this is another example of it. But I think there's something much more insidious going on here, William. And I'm hoping you can speak to this as a gay man and a not, you say gay, not queer.
I'm identifying as a woman, but I'll try.
It's just something stood out to me here. It's two lines of dialogue in here. One, where they said sex is not just for procreation. And two, that they said we could all get laid a little bit more.
Yeah.
Is that what the person said?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't mean to come off as a Puritan. I don't. I really don't. Because I'm not. And you know me. I'm not. Right? But this makes me really concerned about sex as a drug. And what I mean by that is the following. An argument I once made, and I think this really brings it out to light, is there is a difference between sex with possibility of pregnancy and sex with no possibility of pregnancy. So what I mean by that is there is a difference in gay sex and a difference in straight sex. Now, somebody's going to argue with me, well, what about like straight people who use birth control or straight people who are sterile, right? Well, this is ways in which I think we're making an error here. And what I mean by that is sex where you know there's a possibility of pregnancy, to me, is more intimate. And what I mean by that is not to go out there and have unprotected sex, but it creates a deeper bond when you know there's more going on than simply your own pleasure. And when people are sitting here saying, oh, the fact that they have to sit there and assert sex isn't just for procreation, and when they have to assert we all need to get laid a little bit more, It's like they're trying to push their lifestyle and their psychology on everybody else when the majority of people are not like them. This show literally comes across, William, like gaslighting to me. Oh, yeah. All of you aren't the normal ones. We're the normal ones. And you're the abnormal ones because you are concerned about procreation with sex. And oh, you're not only concerned about getting laid. This is something, you know, the reason that line strikes it for me is, remember when you were a kid and people had problems and they say, oh, well, you just need to get laid, yeah, as if that's the answer to problems?
Yeah.
Is yep. sex amazing? Yes. Is sex enjoyable? Yes. Is it an important part of a relationship building? Yes.
Yes,
isn't
but it's the
answer
result.
To problems?
Yeah, it's the yes. result, not the cause. That's the yes. that's the thing that's flipped right here. Is good that spiritually fulfilling sex, that healing and that all the psychological effects, all that stuff does not come solely from the orgasm, right? It's not just a chemical thing, right? It is right. also a spiritual thing. And here I yes. mean spiritual, a mental connection thing, right? Love being spiritual payment. Yeah, you're right. I think there is a difference. And I think there's an aspect of casual sex in the straight community as well. But I think it's obviously on steroids in the gay community because you don't have that, that possibility of pregnancy, right?
On so, steroids in the gay community is the yeah, perfect metaphor, I think. That?
Yeah. But you understand what I'm saying, right? It's like the idea yes. of casual sex being healthy when we know it is not. I can just point at the gay community and show you that it's not, right?
Right.
That it's not healthy. I don't know. I think you're onto something there. It's hard because I don't think you're saying this, but someone could listen to it and say, oh, well, that means that gay people are lacking, right? Like a healthy gay romantic relationship is lacking in some way because they don't have that. I wouldn't say lacking.
I would say it's more challenging.
Yeah,
it's different and it's more challenging.
Yeah. And that's just a fact of reality, right? You know, I will not have that joy because I will not impregnate a woman and raise a child with her, right? Like, that's just not what I will do. But the other thing is, the other quote that stood out, there's a couple, I got the drops because you know I'm going to use them for the rest of this season at least. This is a queer planet, obviously, but this one, Justin, it drives me nuts.
Queerness has always existed.
First of all, that's clearly an edit. But let's take it. They chose to put it in the trailer for this show, and so I've got to respond to it. Queerness is a Marxist invention of the neo-Marxists from like the 70s and 80s that, and then was spread around in the 90s and then became prevalent in the 2000s. Queerness is exactly a political thing. To say that there are transgender and queer animals is nonsensical. There is no pronouns. There are no lions that use pronouns. There are no Marxist rallies of jackals. There are no frogs that protest for Palestine. All of those things that are queer are there are no animals that reject family and want to destroy the family of their tribe of monkeys or birds. Right. Like these things there are so many things I can point out just in this trailer of using concepts out of their context and applying them to the wrong thing. Biology drives us as humans, just like it does as animals. But we are humans. We have concepts. We have these things, things about morality and aesthetics and politics. And animals do not have those things. And
yes.
Queerness is a moral, political, and aesthetic thing. It is not a biological thing.
Right. What you're talking about, William, is using the word queer descriptively versus prescriptively.
Yes, and but they're shuffling. They're using it in those contexts back and forth all over the place. Right.
Right.
They're
right. Well, that's what
everywhere.
I'm talking about. If let me finish, I'm sorry, I'm not getting angry. It's important.
Yeah.
That shuffling you're referring to is equivocating on the word queer, because the literal denotative meaning of the word queer is just different or strange.
Right.
And definitionally, being gay or being bi is different or strange because it is a smaller amount of the population. So definitionally, it is queer. So on the denotative, descriptive use of the word queer, queerness has always existed. However, as you're pointing out, they are equivocating between that and the connotations that have been brought in prescriptively by Marxism and collectivism in order to have them raise up as an oppressed class.
Yeah. Yep.
Way to step on it, William.
Yeah. But I
you're passionate. I'm not upset with you. I understand why this matters so much to you your identity.
Yeah. Yeah, with my identity. It's more like with my rejection of this identity, right?
The idea
that to be gay brings in all this baggage. They're doing this now to animals, Justin. They're not just doing it to me personally, which they've done since the 2000s, right? Now they're doing it to animals. They're doing it to the whole planet.
This is a queer planet.
This, you had mentioned it before at the top of the show. This has to be the last straw, right? On this woke wagon train. It can't get any worse than this is a queer planet, can it? Now that we've queered the planet, are we going to queer the solar system?
This is them. They're not hiding anything anymore. They're literally trying to say life is different than you believed it was. Everything you were taught is wrong.
Everything
That's literally
is queer.
What they're trying to tell us.
Everything is queer.
It's an equivocation, William.
Yeah.
It's an equivocation because.
Right. But I'm not going to allow it. Meaning, like, when they say queer, I know they want this confusion, and I'm going to always assume they mean the political queer. Always.
Right. Well, and it's beyond just the use of the word queer, it's the political version of the word natural as well when I'm saying equivocating. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
In nature, gayness does occur. You can't argue that. In human beings, gayness occurs naturally. I believe people are born gay. I also believe there are people who suffer trauma and they become gay for those reasons.
Yes.
Or they suffer gender dysphoria for traumatic reasons. You know, they have trauma and it's a response to that. There's a whole spectrum of reasons people are gay, people are trans, right? They have gender dysphoria. However, they're equivocating on the word natural. Natural meaning good, or natural meaning equal to. And now I'm not saying equal rights should be denied and all of these things. Obviously, I'm not saying that. But the better word is probably same. They're using natural to equivocate to same. And as I was pointing out, being gay is not the same as being straight. It never has and never will be. And that's what they're trying to gaslight past. They're even trying to say
that it's better.
Right.
Right.
That it's
better.
It's better. That dude, somebody made that argument to me when I was in high school. Somebody was like, we're going to evolve past straightness because we're going to realize that straightness is only existing for procreation. We're going to figure
like
out
an argument a mutual acquaintance of ours would make, someone with lots of muscles.
Yeah, well, this was not somebody with lots of muscles. It was somebody in my high school, but yes. But that's because they need to feel superior, right? It's comparative. It's collective. It's just...
Yeah.
This is disgusting. And it's disgusting for many reasons we've talked about, but also because it puts us in a tough position.
Right.
Where you don't want to argue against people who are born a certain way and say they're bad people because they were born a certain way, because I certainly don't believe that. But it's really easy for people to say that when you say, hey, no, this isn't a queer planet and gay and queer are not the same as straight. Then you immediately become a bad guy.
Yep. You're a bigot. You're a homophobe, clearly. Yeah. If you don't buy all the queer arguments, then you are a homophobe. You are the other, right? This is a queer planet after all, Justin. I mean, I don't remember if we covered it on the show, if it's in my endless stream of things I post on Discord, but you have people who are straight just identifying as queer and adopting pronouns just to be part of the community, right? Mostly women, but you have that now, right? So this is a tribe that means things that have nothing to do with sexuality. Queer has nothing to do with gay or homosexuality. And that is crazy. You can see it on the Pride flag. That's why the Pride flag has BLM and a bunch of other things. Isn't there? Aren't they adding Palestine to the Pride flag for this year? I bet you they will be, Justin.
I thought they already did, so.
Probably.
I don't know. Well, we'll see. I think that's a good place to end the farce for this week. Let's talk about some art in The Hopeful Bromantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. As always, if you'd like to continue the conversation with us during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. All you have to do is go to themidside.com and themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode link, and in there you'll find the Discord join code. That's where you can witness some farce with us during the week. We had a lot of good farce witnessing in the chat this week, all about all the different stuff that came up. X-Men 97 came up as a topic of conversation. Somebody told me I was right, which we'll talk about this further when William finishes the season. I won't be finishing the season, but something that seemed obvious to me apparently was not obvious to other people. And they were like, hey, he was right. But I was just kind of like, yeah, I thought that was a given. Like, I literally thought it was a given, William. So I found 100%. That really, really interesting. So yeah, you can talk about some trailers in there too. Drop some farce for us to witness. This week, William, I saw the movie If. Now, we've been talking this year about how everything is very, very average, have we not?
Yep, it's been kind of a mid-year, and not in the mid-side way.
Yeah. I am here to tell you, you can finally go to the movies. Here's my one-sentence review. If recalls the power of smaller scale 80s storytelling like Big and Little Monsters while adding a pinch of M. Night Shyamalan. I give this movie, William, a so bromantic rating. This is not only the best movie of the year by far so far, and I will say this, with this movie being so good and Ryan Reynolds starring in Deadpool and Wolverine, Ryan Reynolds is in the front runner position for the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award this year already. So we already possibly have our farce story of the year and our Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award. But this is one of the best movies of the last few years. Now, I don't want to spoil too much because I want people to go out and see this.
But there's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
The best thing about this movie is, like I said, the small scale of it. This is the story of a little girl dealing with the fact that her father is in the hospital. That's not a spoiler. That's in the opening 15 minutes of the show. He's going to have some sort of heart surgery, and she doesn't know how to deal with it. This, of course, then brings up the world of imaginary friends. This is where I talk about Big and what was the monster? Little Monsters, the Fred Savage movie, right? In Little Monsters, there's this whole world. But unlike modern movies, there's no obsession with how does this play across the universe, across the human species, across the planet. Same thing here. There are rules established, but it's not beyond this little section of New York City. How does this play for every other human being and human child on the planet? You could go into that, but they don't. They focus on the relationship between the girl and really herself. The best line in this movie is, the most important stories are the ones we tell ourselves or ourself. I'd have to remember the exact quote, but it was an amazing quote. It's at the beginning. It frames the movie. It's great. And then the reason I refer to Big is, William, the whole conceit of Big is, he goes to this Zoltan machine, he transforms into an adult, and he goes through a journey. There's nothing of, well, what does this machine do? Can other people go to this machine and get wishes and so on and so forth? It's all about just the journey of the character. Mm-hmm. And that's why this movie soars. You become emotionally invested in this 12-year-old girl and the journey she is going through. And it's well directed. It's well acted. The only sort of problem I have in it is there's this young boy who is I just thought he was a terrible actor. And he took me out of it when I watched it. There's also maybe some choices with the girl's performance as far as she's not too emotional at certain points. There's elements of repression in it that I think that may have been informing her acting. I think that's why it was that way. But these are all minor things. This is a tremendous, tremendous movie, and I would recommend other people see it, and I would look forward to hearing what they have to say about it. So again, the movie If, directed by John Krasinski, which, by the way, this makes me kind of maybe want to go back and watch A Quiet Place with how well he succeeded here. Mm-hmm. And starring Ryan Reynolds, If I give a sob romantic rating.
So I take it it's now number one, in your number one spot.
Yeah, by far it's the best movie of the year. Awesome. By far it's the best movie. I mean, not that there's been much else. I mean, if I go through my list here. Let me go through my list so far this year from the bottom up. How about that? How does that sound?
All right.
So from the bottom up, we have... Well, I'm clicking it. Okay. We have Roadhouse, Land of Bad, Lisa Frankenstein, Imaginary, which is the other movie about imaginary friends, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, Self-Reliance, Argyle, The Fall Guy, The American Society of Magical Negroes, The Mean Girls remake, Abigail, Boy Kills World, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, and If. So as you can see, this is by far the best movie of the year so far. May end up being the movie of the year. We'll see. All right, that's a movie that's out. Let's talk about some movies that are going to come out in Trailer Takedown. I put the trailers in Discord, usually the Saturday before we record, so you can watch them when you want. Maybe you watch a trailer, we talk about it. You watch a trailer, we talk about it.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
My Penguin Friend is the companion piece to Queer Planet. I don't know. This is a very strange movie to me because I don't really get it. I feel like I watched Homeward Bound in the 90s, so I don't need to watch this. Or was Homeward Bound in the 80s? I don't even remember. I think it was the 90s. But it's the idea that this guy rescues a penguin, the penguin becomes friends with the guy, and then he comes back. The penguin, they let him go, but he comes back every year to see the person. And it's like, hey, this guy has a friend who's a penguin, which is, yeah, cool. He's got a friend who's a penguin, but what value do I get out of watching this as a movie? I don't understand this. It just seems to me more equivocation of that the undoing of the Industrial Revolution. It's like if we were more like animals in a state of nature, we would be better. That's what this seems to be pushing. Tackle?
I don't know. I thought, given how shitty all the movies are, this looked like... possibly based on a true story, of course, but this looked cute and about friendship. I feel like it tried to do some almost Disney sort of vibes to it. I sense, like you do, that there's a little bit of like anti-science, anti-capitalism in it, but I don't know. I wasn't completely turned off by it. It looked like something that maybe would be worth watching on a flight. It seemed benevolent, which was interesting to me. So this might be a...
Netflix and Hug. Second trailer.
Never Let Go is a horror movie starring Halle Berry. And what I will say about this trailer is that the further it went, the better it got for me. Because at the beginning, it seemed like a stretch of a premise. Now, we do have the movie by M. Night's daughter coming up where these people are trapped by these creatures who are watching them. It's called The Watchers. And this seemed to be a variation on that. And I was just kind of like, what are we doing with these premises? Where Halle Berry's in a house with her two kids and they can't go out unless they have ropes, I presume, attached to the house. And if the ropes get detached, these creatures can attack them, it seems. But then the trailer took a turn where the question actually became, is the villain these creatures or is it Halle Berry? Are there actual creatures? Is Halle Berry hallucinating? Or is this just about overprotective parenting and overprotective mothers? Enmeshment with a narcissistic mother figure. Because in the beginning, I was like, this is a stupid premise. You need to keep a rope attached to your house to go outside, and that's scary. But if this is something the mother is making them do in order to stay protected, it reminded me of like when Adam Carolla was talking about the pandemic and all of the things people had to do in order to protect themselves. Oh, wear these masks and social distance. That's going to protect you from the virus, protect you from nature. There seems to have a certain element here. Tie a rope to the house and it'll protect you from nature. So I'm not sold on this movie because the trailer is like half and half. But this is one, if nothing else is out that week or I'm looking for something to watch, I could watch this. So this for me is a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was not as skeptical, but still skeptical of the premise at the beginning. But as soon as we started getting into the question like of attachment issues, like it's literally a physical embodiment of attachment issues, right?
Yeah.
Of enmeshment. Like,
well, that's okay, what I mean. I was like, premise is stupid. Oh, I get it as a metaphor.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's going somewhere. So like, yeah, I think I agree with you. This one looks interesting. And even though I'm not a huge horror fan, it drew me in, Justin, by the end. It did draw me in. So I think much like you, this is another
Netflix and hug. Third trailer.
It Ends With Us is based on the Colleen Hoover novel. Now, this is a novel I'm aware of because my wife has read it. Students at school read it. So the first thing I have to say is I will be seeing this movie because my wife will want to see it. I always joked that based on this title, the last line of the book needs to be what, William? Or the last word needs to be what?
The end?
No, it needs to be us.
Us, yeah.
If the book title is It Ends With Us, the last word of the book needs to be us.
Yeah.
And nobody ever fully explained what this is about to me until I realized by watching this trailer finally what it's about. This is a story about abuse. This is a story about breaking the cycle of abuse that goes across generations. That's what It Ends With Us means. This is about the woman finally trying to make the right choice. Now, is that interesting to me? No, especially because in today's day and age, how is this going to be made without any elements of toxic masculinity and talking about how evil men are? Does that mean I'm not going to see it? No, I'm going to see it. And then I'm going to have a conversation with my wife about, do you see what you're being told here? And do you see how that's going to affect our relationship? So in a pure world, this is a tackle for me.
Tackle.
Yeah, I have no faith that this will be done without toxic masculinity, right? And I don't know that there's any necessarily in the trailer, so maybe that's just a prejudice, but I don't know. There is a story to be told about getting out of this sort of generational trauma, right? But I don't know in today's climate it can be created. I just don't. And
I don't know if Colleen Hoover is a good enough writer from everything I've heard about her novels to be the one that does it.
So this is a pretentious tackle for me.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Megalopolis? How do you... William, I don't even know how to say this. Megalopolis?
Yeah, Megalopolis.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how to say it. Is Francis Ford Coppola's magnum opus, or what he thinks is his magnum opus. It stars Adam Driver, and it seems to be a meditation on America and the American dream. The way it was shot and the way the trailer was done was very reminiscent of Damien Chazelle's Babylon. It looked batshit insane in all the right ways. And I can't talk about this movie without bringing in all the conversation around it and people saying he would never make it. It would never see the light of day. He would never get distribution. And apparently he's distributing it himself now, is what I read.
Yes, and it even says there's teasers about an IMAX, see it in IMAX, and he hasn't even got an IMAX distribution yet.
Well, I mean, how does he not? Isn't this trailer being super successful?
It is. I don't know. At the time that they were teasing the be sure to see it in IMAX, he still hadn't signed for any IMAX distribution. But I think they are working on it. It might already be done by now. I don't know. I haven't checked since I
okay.
Since I checked.
Well, even without that, this is a hug. But with all of that added context, this is a have to see this opening night in theaters.
Hug?
Yeah, this looks visually interesting. I'm sure it's going to have some anti-American elements and anti-capitalist elements in it. That being said, it just looks interesting. I don't know if it will end up being over the top pretentious, right? Like that is a trap we could fall in. But this looks cool. This looks like it's going to be a fun watch. So even if I end up not liking the story or the theme, I think I'll enjoy this. And much like you, I'm excited to go see it. Hug.
Hug.
Midsider Lucid in Discord backs up our sentiment here. He says, the story behind Megalopolis is enough to make me want to see it. So there's something to be said for, in today's day and age, somebody making something that nobody wants to let them make or release and doing it completely on his own. I mean, M. Night did that, right, when his career was kind of in the toilet, and he's back now. So,
yeah.
All right, William, that brings us to the end of this trip. What did we learn?
I learned
everything you were taught as a kid is wrong.
Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that hit the other drop.
This is a queer planet.
I had no idea. I was taking what approach, William? But let's take the heteronormative approach here.
And you didn't even realize. You didn't.
How could I?
Yeah, you didn't. Hold on. You didn't. Well,
ladies and gentlemen, I am not a genius.
So you didn't realize it.
That's true. That's true. And isn't that part of the privilege of heteronormativity that you don't question it?
That is the hold on, you are privileged somehow. Where's that one? I've got so many now.
I am still privileged in some way.
That's why.
Can we just end the ban on transgender Americans?
The greatest.
As Commander in Chief, I was proud to have ended the ban on transgender Americans.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show. As you can tell, I'm just a crazy person talking in the corner of my closet. But now we know why I'm always in the closet, because this is a queer planet. If you want to support how queer this planet is, go to themidside.com/store or themidside.com/patreon or themidside.com/locals or find us on Fountain. This is how we keep the lights on. And if you want to grow the show, I tell you to tell a female friend, but I don't even fucking know anymore. I don't know, go out and be queer, whatever. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Ebelsnesky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
This is a queer planet.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
Those drops go together perfectly.
I was waiting all show for that.
Oh, that's perfect.